Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with hundreds of hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to John Ashford about his near-death experience. Hi, John. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Simon. Thank you so much for having me.
So we're going to be talking to you about your near-death experience. But before we get into that, could you tell us, what were you like before the near-death experience?
Yes, I was not a great guy. I was a C-level executive. You could say manipulative. I had very little any empathy or sympathy for anybody. I really didn't care about people. I really thought that I had life figured out, which was make as much money as I can before I die and spend it doing debaucherous things. So I wasn't the best individual. I did not really have any spiritual background, so to speak. I was raised Catholic, but it never registered with me, and I left all spirituality when I turned 18. Yeah, I was the kind of guy that if you put down the pros and cons on a piece of paper, there's probably more cons than pros.
What happened to you that caused you to have a near-death experience?
I like to say when it's your time to go, it's your time to go. In my case, I collapsed in a grocery store on a weekend about 3 years ago. And at the time, I was very, very healthy. I was a two-hour-a-day gym guy and tracked every macro with all my food. And I was pretty much bulletproof, or at least I thought. And when I collapsed, I thought, well, this has to be pretty serious because what could it be? A stroke, a heart attack, something to that effect. So I ended up taking myself to the emergency room, which was about a mile away. And they couldn't find anything. They couldn't find anything wrong why I collapsed. And they were just completely unsure. They gave me some fluids and let me go. Well, sure enough, it happened a week later. And again, I ended up in the emergency room. And again, they missed what ended up taking my existence. The following week, I ended up so sick. I had lost close to 10 pounds. I could barely eat. I couldn't really walk much. I was stuck on the couch most of the week. And my eyesight was disappearing. Hair was falling out, and my body temperature just could not be controlled. I was cold all the time, and it was 70 degrees out here Fahrenheit in the States. And by the end of that second week, I had woken up and had faced death and ended up passing. What it ended up being was a gallstone that got stuck in a bile duct, which caused an infection, leading to sepsis, which was a three-stage process: sepsis stage one, stage two, and stage three. And at the end of stage three, you only have about 12 hours to make it to a hospital. And even then, you only have a 40% chance of survival. And I never went. It turns out I have a DNA mutation to pain sensitivity. I just thought I was a tough guy most of my life. And that's why I never felt the gallstone. I just continually got more sick until it took my life.
So you were at home then, I suppose, when that happened?
I was. It was 4:30 at night. I had woken up and I had been sleeping with my cell phone pre-dialed on 911 for an emergency call because I had no idea what was happening. I had stumbled to the bathroom and I had fallen into the wall. I had noticed that my right leg was no longer working. And upon reaching the bathroom, I kind of fell into the sink to prop myself up. And upon doing so, I could see that my hands had turned completely gray, corpse-like. And I thought, well, this is interesting. It It's kind of like a hallucination, I suppose. But it wasn't until I looked in the mirror and saw what had happened to my face that I realized that I was facing death. So yes, I ended up passing in a bathroom in my own house.
So when you look back at it, do you see anything before that, maybe in the weeks or months before, that may have been spiritual, that there was some kind of a premonition or a clue, a sign that you might have been getting from the spirit world?
Yeah, there were several over the years, but there was one in particular that I haven't spoken about before, that I had moved to the area about 2.5 years prior. And during my going away party with a number of friends, I had chosen to move from the East Coast of the United States to the West Coast, in particular into Northern Idaho, which is up by the Canadian border. It's very cold, it's rugged. And at the going away party for my move, my six friends, my six guy friends, my what you would call my drinking buddies, all said, "Why Idaho? Why now? Why did you pick to move out there?" And I made the joke that just said, "Well, I'm going out there to die, obviously." And in that moment, my thought process was, I'm going out there to retire. I don't plan on moving again. And eventually I will die in Idaho. But the divine joke is it didn't take another 50 years of existence. It only took a couple more before I passed away. But yes, there were several signs throughout my life that I recognized through the near-death experience that had all been pointing to where I've ended up now.
So you were at home and you collapsed. Was there anybody else in the house?
Yes, my dog. My dog was there, but it didn't register with him until I returned. And when I returned to my body, there was a look that he gave me. We were very close. I think he was 12 at the time, and I had him since he was a puppy. And there was a look that he just gave me that said, "I recognize you, but I don't recognize you." And it was a blank stare as if he was seeing a ghost. But beyond that, no, there was nobody home with me.
Did you, an ambulance turn up or somebody help you? Or how did you survive it?
Yeah, that's what's interesting to me is when I woke up on the floor, I was twisted and I actually felt myself return to the body. I felt all the systems of the body have to start again. And for somebody who has apparently a very high tolerance for pain, it didn't feel great. It was painful. And when I tried to get up off the floor, I had reached for the sink of which there was a thermometer there all week. I'd been taking my temperature, trying to figure out what was going on. And when I grabbed the thermometer, I figured I was too weak to get up. I'll just stick it in my mouth. And when I did, the temperature came back as 94 degrees Fahrenheit, which is an emergency hypothermia situation. Your body temperature is too low. You need a hospital. And I shrugged it off. I looked at the temperature and thought, "Oh, that's interesting." It didn't even register with me. And once I was able to get up off the floor and look in the mirror again, my face had filled in, whereas prior to death, it was completely empty. All the fluid of my face had drained. It had turned completely gray. And I thought, that's really interesting. And I just felt this healing in a way that didn't register as healing. I felt good. I didn't feel great, but I felt good enough to walk out of the bathroom, whereas I had stumbled to it earlier, and go and look for my dog. I know that's part of the experience. I know that if I had come back in a panic, "Oh no, call 911, you collapsed again," it would have affected what I experienced. So I do see that part as actually still part of the NDE experience, even though I was in an awakened state here. It was kind of like I wasn't completely back here. It was like I had one leg on the other side and one leg here, and that persisted for about 3 days. So it's really interesting that I just felt no desire to or need to call emergency services, where for the prior 2 weeks, every shallow breath that I had, I was ready to call 911. So I know it's just part of that process.
So when you collapsed then, what happened? Did you rise up out of your body? Were you looking down on it?
Not typically. I'll just say this. I'm a part of the world's two largest near-death experience studies, and not everybody gets to come out of their body and see it. I experienced in my collapse what I call a velvety darkness. Now, there are a lot of us that just see darkness until we, quote unquote, wake up. In my case, I never saw my body. I didn't see my body leaving, and I didn't see it on my return. But what I did feel in that velvety darkness is something that I call, you could call it the caressing, a caressing love, as if you were a child wrapped up in a blanket, a newborn baby wrapped up in a blanket and then swaddled and gently pressed against the chest of a loved one. It felt like I was encompassed by it. And it's hard to describe because it also felt like there was movement in it, but it was a darkness that's completely dark. There's no light. There's no physical marker that says I'm moving. It just felt like that. And I don't know how long I was in that state. I don't know if it was 1 second, if it was the equivalent of a year. I cannot say. It just doesn't register as time. But I never saw my body. I just experienced that velvety darkness, which I would say is an unconditional, loving, and safe space.
When you were in that space, did you still have full awareness of who you are and what happened in your life?
No, that's what's interesting. And I always say that the intellect does die, but the real you continues. There was a moment before passing, when I saw myself in the mirror, that I just recognized that the human parts of me were now behind me. It's your body and your mind. You could say all three parts of you, your body, your mind, and your spirit, all understand what death is. The last part to know is your personality. So in that moment where I knew I was about to die, it just registers throughout you. Your thought process, most people would think your thought process is, oh no, I'm about to die. Or, oh wait, what about my dog in the other room? What about my parents? What about my friends? And I'll just say that death is amazingly graceful because it pushes those things behind you. It's almost like you've surpassed that feeling of needing to really worry about anything. It's a process. It's pre-made. It's gentle. It's beautiful. So in that space on the other side, you don't have, at least I didn't at the time, I did not have any recognition that I had passed. In fact, I didn't receive that until I quote unquote woke up on the other side. And an interesting fact is almost all of us near-death experiencers have to be told that we've passed. It feels so real on the other side that you don't have this wonder of, oh no, where am I? Oh no, what happened? Where's my body? It feels more real than rolling out of your own bed. And there isn't the intellect that has the worry or the intellect, you know, the guy who liked ice cream didn't make the trip. So it's all far bigger than I think we give it credit for. It's all planned in such a way that there isn't worry in a sense. Not to say that some near-death experiencers have had it, but in my case, I didn't experience anything that said, oh no, where's my body? What's happened?
You say it's all planned in a way. Does that mean that perhaps this was planned before you were born?
Yeah, I do believe so. It's during my life review, I was shown many periods of my life where I call it the tap on the shoulder. You can call it the spirit world, the divine, the universe, and energy. It doesn't matter. All the words are wrong, but you're tapped on the shoulder by this benevolent force, this being that says, hey, we're just going to remind you that you're a part of something bigger than your material existence. And I was shown that several times.
So you're in that black space. Then what happens next?
Yeah, I like to call it the long blink. It's kind of like if you were to blink over a few seconds rather than just a quick blink. After this long blink, I woke up in what I'll call something that resembled Scotland, Highlands, or Ireland, or something along the lines where the grass is all the same length, you know, the 6-inch grass with dotted gray stones sticking out. Rolling hills. It looked like a place where sheep would graze. And in my case, it was a beautiful, just natural landscape. And that's an interesting fact about the studies. We will all pass and we will all see what welcomes us most. And in my case, because I didn't have any spiritual beliefs, I saw something that I really loved, which was nature. Others who have other beliefs will see what welcomes them the most. In my case, given the life I had lived, if I had seen a church or the pearly gates of heaven, I would have thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. It would not have been welcoming in a way. So I woke up in this landscape that resembled the form of that Scottish landscape here, but it wasn't really that place. Everything emitted light. The grass was just as conscious as I was. Every blade was just as conscious as I was. There was light emitting from it. The hills were alive. It was like the hills were breathing. Everything there was emitting light. The stones and everything there had consciousness on a scale that you could recognize. And I remember upon waking, I'll call it waking in that state, the first thing I realized was I could see 360 degrees around me. But when I say see, we separate our senses here, seeing, smelling, touching, and so forth. There, it was like they were all combined. So seeing is also feeling, and feeling is also seeing. And you're feeling. You can feel everything there. Like I can feel it now just talking about it. It reverberates. It would be like something reverberating through your entire body here. So yeah, it's interesting to compare non-material existence on the other side with material existence here and say they both have form, but both are significantly different. One of the big takeaways from the experience is there are no lines of separation, which includes lines of definition. So when I say I woke up and the grass was just as conscious as I was, there's an understanding that the grass was not grass. The grass is in the form of grass, but it isn't grass. You know, it's understanding that we may take the form as a human in existence, but we aren't that. The tree that takes the form as the tree isn't the tree. So you get this immediate understanding of what connection really is, how connected we are, and how even our language or terms that we use for identifying things here aren't really the truth. It's more of a representation of our understanding than what the object may actually be.
Did you get a feeling that there was no time, that perhaps everything was happening in like the eternal now, so to speak?
Yeah, it was very interesting. Time does not register there like at all. And it's the hardest thing to explain. It's kind of like you're just in a moment, a singular moment that can last for eternity. And there isn't anything there that gives you an indicator that time has passed in any way. And it's hard to understand. I know that time is an illusion, as it was shown to me in my life review and what I will call teachings beyond that, that really there only is, even here, there only is this moment. There was never a yesterday and there's never a tomorrow, because you're only in a moment, one moment. So yeah, time didn't register there at all.
So is it that time is a tool or something that's been constructed for what I call 3D world or the material world, so that we can perceive things happening one after the other, which helps us experience things in a certain way on Earth?
You have it. That's exactly what it is. I like to visualize it in a way. You have this being, you can call it God, maybe he's in a tunic and he's got a long beard and he's got a tennis ball in his hand, and he's just bouncing a tennis ball off of the ground. And every time the ball leaves his hand, your existence is that ball. You are that ball. And about the time you hit the ground, that's the end of your existence. It bounces back up into his hand and he bounces the ball again and again and again. And really what time is as that ball falls towards the ground, we get the slow motion view of it. And what that slow motion view of that ball dropping towards the ground gives us, it gives us the perception of, let's say, 100 years of existence to kind of experience what we experience here and build an awareness of what it all actually is. If it was shown to me, it was shown to me on the other side that our lives are actually nothing more than a quick spark. So our lives are instant. So we're only seeing and experiencing a slow motion reel of what our lives actually are, just to build awareness, just to experience, just to have gratitude, experience love and all the wonderful things that existence provide to us.
Okay, so if time sort of doesn't exist and there's the eternal now, there's no past and there's no future, does that mean that our younger selves and our older selves are existing right now as well?
Yeah. So identity, as we know it here, I like to say is the very thing that keeps us from what we actually are. We think we are born, we age, and we die. And in that sense, there's a singular identity. But the one-year-old you is still one-year-old and still running around. The two-year-old, the three-year-old. In fact, the person you were yesterday still exists. So it's understanding that, yes, you can say you have a name and a singular identity here, but you are also all versions of yourself in all possibilities, extending beyond the framework of time. So who are you really? It's when we attach ourselves to this idea that I am this and tomorrow I'm one day older. Well, tomorrow you're actually not one day older. You're in a different version of who you think you are.
So every time we wake up, we're a different version of who we think we are.
Yeah, you could oversimplify it and say it happens when we sleep, but I know it happens real time. So it's remembering that that tennis ball is always falling. It never stops. So it's every second, you could say, if you want to simplify it according to time, you would say as long as time exists, so does your trajectory of change into different versions of yourself. So you are never one static version ever. You're in a constant movement without understanding that's the case.
What did you learn about reincarnation and perhaps how that relates to this?
Yeah, I was shown several of my, what I would call previous existences, but to call them previous would be to apply time in a linear fashion. We exist as more than just ourselves. We exist in more than you can call it one dimension or more than one place. And our existences are taken up by what we truly are, this benevolent, loving force, to experience life as if we've always been wearing gloves and we take off the gloves just to feel things, just to feel what cold feels like and hot feels like, what sand feels like and what something like silk feels like. And we take different existences because they provide us the different angles and different opportunities to come to a realization of what this is.
You're in this amazing landscape. And do you meet anybody, any deceased loved ones or like spirit guides?
Yeah, I did not meet deceased loved ones because I wasn't the type of guy to care if anybody died. So I actually ended up in this place, this landscape, this glorious landscape that I was in. As I moved, I recognized that there was a man on a rock, sitting on a rock up along a side of a hill. And he looked just like any other guy that you might see on a hike out in the wilderness. He was even wearing hiking clothes. And he was just sitting on this rock with his legs dangling off. And it was like he was waiting for me. And I know I didn't have a body. I didn't recognize that I had a body. You feel like you're upright, but there's just this knowing that you don't have a physical body. But I like to say when I made eye contact with this gentleman on the rock, it was, I call it the 3-hour exercise ball or 3-hour beach ball. It's this just big ball of information that telepathically just gets inserted into your understanding. And that was the welcome from this being that let me know that I had passed, what had happened, where I was. There was nothing to fear. It's all love. It's just the most amazing 3-hour conversation in an instant. And the being, you can give that being, I'm sure, any name you can come up with. And there are a couple famous ones you can call it. But I'll just say he was around 33 years old with brown hair and brown eyes. And it's interesting because when I saw him, I recognized him, but at the same time, I did not know how. So it's like seeing a long lost friend, but you have amnesia and can't remember the friend's name. And this being felt that on me and telepathically, as he approached me, just said to me, "I am you and you are me." And with that, when I say that on interviews or when I write it, we read it or hear it linearly as, well, we're together. But when you feel that message on the other side, it reinforces the understanding that there is no separate identity. We're all one. It's something that echoes throughout eternity when you feel it. And so who was that being? Well, that being was me and I was that being. Some people would call that by religious name. And in doing so, they recognize an aspect of that being, but they don't recognize their connection with that being. So beyond that, I experienced, I'll call it the embrace of God, that did not take the shape of a being. But that being that introduced me to the other side was the only being that I had the experience with.
Getting a download like that must have been a massive hit. Like if you're human and you get something like that, it's going to be shocking. But for you in that space, was it just normal? You just could take it?
No, even there, it was something that you... hard to explain. It's something that you feel like echoes throughout eternity. There's a boom factor to it. It's a heavy divine message. And, you know, receiving the 3-hour conversation, the welcome telepathically, that feels loving and it feels surrendering and you feel acceptance and understanding and all these words we try to use to define it. But when you receive, there were certain parts of my experience where I received things that were so heavy and divine and glowing, and, you know, it's be the equivalent of an old Monty Python movie where the clouds separate and God shows his face and you hear this booming voice that just rattles the earth. And it was along those lines. It just, even in that space, you feel the weight of it.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. What happened next? Did you return or you had the life review, didn't you?
I did. I went into my life review. I will just say the life review was incredible. It's one of the most powerful tools. I wish everybody could have it. It reframes your understanding of existence, your understanding of connection with others, how our actions affect the world. And I can say that even though I've had the life review and was given the choice after the life review to return or stay there, I don't feel like the life review ever ended. I feel like it's a part of me now that continues. I don't feel like it was one exercise and I'm grateful for that exercise. I feel like it's a part of my DNA now, and I continue through my existence having that life review as an accessible tool to change perception or adjust perception or help others adjust their perception. So the life review was interesting. It felt instant, but at the same time, drawn out, like that slow motion view we have of the ball falling towards the ground. And I can't explain it, as it did feel instant and it did feel long and drawn out and detailed. So something you can only experience on the other side, I suppose. But I saw all parts of my life. I saw things that reminded me that we aren't ever alone. I saw every time where I was in my head thinking about something, alone somewhere, driving on a back road, thinking I was the only one in the car. I saw all the times that we get tapped on the shoulder by what I'll call the divine and saying, "Hey, are you paying attention? No? Okay, that's all right. It's your free will." I experienced circumstances with others from their perspective. I was able to feel what they were feeling in several interactions with me, which is pretty, I will say, eye-opening. It just reinforces that idea that we really don't have these individual identities. We're all connected. And I could probably speak about the life review for the next 2 hours, but it shows you that life is not what you think it is. Free will is not what you think it is. It's not choice A or choice B. It's waking up to this magical divine existence and trying to live with that in the forefront, rather than live through an intellectual illusion of separation lifestyle that says, well, this is good, but I know that there's better and I want to go find better. Those very definitions are the things that keep us from understanding what existence is about.
So is it then that you return to the body? Did you get a choice were you just thrown back?
No, I received a choice, but I also know that the choice was a divine joke in a way. It's I came out of the life review. I have this understanding of connection, who I am, who everybody is, what it, you know, what life consists of. And in that moment, given the choice to say, well, you can stay here with me, or you can go back and help facilitate your understanding, you know, share this with others to help them understand. And it's your feeling of connection for all others is so great that it's not really a choice. Your love for all others trumps anything that you would feel for yourself. And you don't really feel yourself there. There's no yourself that you're making decisions for. So I chose to return. But the interesting thing is, my understanding at that point was I was choosing to return to share what I had experienced to, you could say, to that point. But what happened was when I made the choice to return, everything changed. There was a second part of my NDE, which is actually the more profound side. It was in that moment that the, I'll just say the landscape disintegrated. I call it the other side, a pool of formless divinity that takes form as you need it. So the landscape welcomed me as a warm hug, but the landscape was only in form as long as I needed it. And at this point, I didn't need it anymore. So it disappeared, and the being that I was with changed shape in a way that would lead you to believe he was much older, but I could also tell that it was the same being. And we're in the place that I would call the void, the place where all the formless exists, the place where all form comes from. And in that place, I was given information that I just can't explain how I have it other than the experience. Information about existence, consciousness, energy, love, healing. It just went on and on and on. And sometimes there were props that would just materialize in front of us, and other times there weren't. Sometimes there were examples, and sometimes there were just a third-party view of the planet and all existence. And I can't say how long I was there in that spot, but the information felt like it went on forever. And it was only at the end of receiving all this information that I like to say it would be like pausing a movie. Everything froze. And we are in this version of space that doesn't really compare with what we see when we look up into the sky or through a telescope. The stars were as big as houses, and the stars were conscious and alive. And the darkness between the stars was fluid, and just as alive as the stars, just as alive as I was. Everything was conscious and living. And in that space, I will say something that appeared like the sun, like a brilliant light that was just different from all other sparkles of light and the stars, the big star right next to you. It was a light that was just different. And it kept growing and growing and growing and growing until it encompassed everything. The darkness was now swallowed by this light. The stars had been swallowed by this light. The being next to me had been swallowed by this light. And I was the last thing to be swallowed by this light. But like everything else there, you recognize the light as something living, something divine, but you also recognize it as, I would say, the thing that controls all things. You could call it God if you want to use that word. Whatever word that I could use to describe it is far too small. And when you feel that light, it's like you can feel all existence. You can feel all love for all existence in all of its facets, in all of its possibilities, in all of its different versions of reality, all at once. And it's an unconditional love that I can't possibly explain. And when you're integrated into that light, it feels like forever. It feels like eternity. And it feels like you would take an infinite number of reincarnations, existences here, just for the opportunity to feel that again. And I call it the embrace of God. I don't know what else to call it. But from that point, being fully integrated into that loving source, I felt something like a raindrop. I felt something like that would say a raindrop on the end of a branch falling to the ground. And that's what it felt like to exit it and re-enter my body. But when I re-entered my body, the heaviness that comes with the understanding of material existence, it's undeniable. It's so heavy. And that drop that landed back into that body was, you know, the very raindrop of life that gave that body life again after 3 hours.
Your body was dead for 3 hours? Was there rigor mortis? Because also there's that thing that if your brain doesn't get oxygen, you know, within 90 seconds, it starts to be affected. Is that right?
Yeah, as I understand it, there should be no reason that I am here. Yeah, considering all the organ damage I suffered from the sepsis, you know, doctors say it's a miracle that I'm alive. I'm lucky to be alive. You know, there were some doctors that gave me the speech of, well, this is really interesting. You have so much damage because if this had reached stage 3, you would be dead. And I know for a fact that I was gone. But yeah, the body on return did not work at all. The body, when I say that raindrop fell back into the body, I could feel what I will just call consciousness in the center of the cavity of my body. And I can't explain it other than you're not even fully inhabiting the body at that point. You're just an awareness, call it in the center of your chest. And as this awareness, this drop kind of expanded in a way, there were parts of the body that I felt start again. The first thing I felt was fluid on my left side of my body start to move in the veins. It's funny. There are all these things that we feel in the human body that we don't feel. We can't recognize the fluids in our body moving around. Maybe if you drank too much water or something, you would feel fluid moving around in your digestive system. But you can't recognize the movement of fluid in your veins. But in that moment, as that fluid had to start again, I could recognize it. I felt what it feels like to take one heartbeat. The amount of energy it takes just to start the heart was incredible. It's like our bodies are never meant to stop, right? The stopping of the heart is not supposed to happen. We're supposed to continue on because to start it again was incredible. I felt the lungs that had pancaked on my back because though I was twisted and I was laying on my back, I felt them inflate. This is part of the miracle. I felt them inflate before I ever felt taking a breath. So it was kind of like there was this divine process as all this physical, as all these physical systems are restarting, my consciousness or awareness was growing within the body. And it wasn't until those two had met where the heart was beating. I had taken a first gasp of a breath. I felt the fluids in my body moving that I felt that I had filled the body with awareness. I felt the desire to try and open my eyes, to try and move. It's the strangest feeling. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but you get the feeling of how strong the body is, but also how fragile it is. You get the taste of mortality. And in that moment, yeah, I was twisted on the floor. I had kind of one arm behind me. My legs are kind of twisted. I'd fallen on the ground. My phone had dropped out of my sweatshirt pocket. I'm laying there on the bathroom floor. And I was able to move my hand, my right hand, to be able to just kind of like turn my head a little bit after my eyes had cleared. And the first thing I saw through my eyes, as it's like a camera where you need to turn the lens to slowly gain focus. And once my eyes were able to focus, I realized that I was looking up at the bathroom ceiling. There was no part of me, what's interesting about that is there was no part of me even then that said, well, where am I? What happened? Right? There's no, even though I had collapsed twice before in the previous weeks, and you're immediately going, where am I? What happened? Like, what's going on? Let's get to a hospital. There was none of that on my return. It's like all those human feelings were kept from me as either part of the experience or part of settling into the experience. And about the time I could see my phone, and I checked the phone and it had said 7:30. This had happened at 4:30 and now it's 7:30, 3 hours. And that's when I tried to reach up for the sink and lift myself off the floor, but I was too weak. And that's when I shoved the thermometer into my mouth, which came back as 94 degrees. My resting natural temperature has always been 97.1 my entire life. So it read 94, which was 3 degrees. I didn't recognize why that mattered, why I was shown that number. I'll just say all of this, there is no coincidence in any part of it or in any part of anybody's life. So I was supposed to put that thermometer in my mouth. I was supposed to see that it was 94 degrees. And it wasn't until about a year later that I had given a hospice nurse some guidance that she asked some of these questions and said, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. You lose 1 degree per hour of body temperature when you pass. So I was gone 3 hours and there I had lost my 3 degrees of body temperature. So there is no explanation for me being back here or having the NDE other than there's a divine hand in all things that makes things happen. I know that to be the case now. I don't have to question it anymore. You could say I've not only met it, I was integrated with it for a moment or forever. I don't know. But and getting off the floor and then looking back in the mirror and seeing that my face had filled back in and then trying to understand where to put this information that 3 hours before I had none of this information. I couldn't have told you anything spiritual. I had a running joke that I would say people who were into crystals, I just called them rock people. And if anybody ever said the word chakra to me, I would walk away. Or if somebody asked me to go to church, I would say, I'll meet you in the bar after you go to church. You know, I had an aversion to spirituality. And then to wake up and have an understanding of spirituality and feel what it meant to live a spiritual existence in that moment. If I was more human in the moment, it would have shattered me. I think it would have destroyed me on the spot because it was so contrary to who I was for 46 years. And I know that's why the waking up happened the way it did, why I was able to just walk out of the room and go and see my dog. Because if I had been given the earth-shattering ego comparison in that moment, I don't think I'd be speaking with you right now.
So how did this kind of change you afterwards? Was it a gradual change to how you lived and treated people, or was it straight away?
It was immediate. I remember I didn't care for my neighbors at all. And I remember taking my first shower after returning, laughing in the shower because I was saying to myself, wow, I actually love my neighbors. It's incredible. And the change, there was a period of change over a year, but it had more to do with my healing and it had more to do with the gifts that I received on the other side. But the desire to continue the life that had happened those 3 hours earlier, it immediately stopped. I had boats and motorcycles and things, and I came back and I immediately saw everything from a shifted perspective that recognized why I even bought the boats in the first place. You know, you think you want something, you work towards it, you purchase it, and you feel a sense of accomplishment, and you feel this fake version of happiness until that becomes the new normal. And then you look for something else to give you that version of happiness. And I realized that all the things I had purchased and the entire life that I had built and lived was all for the avoidance of what we actually are. It was to keep it at bay. So I immediately walked away from my C-level career. I walked away from all business and office work whatsoever, consulting. I sold everything. I started meditating. I started experiencing psychic messages, orbs of light in the sky, orbs of light in my house. I started feeling things on people in groups. I was the kind of guy who always wanted to be in the middle of the crowd in the busiest bar having the best time. And I found myself struggling to even walk into a coffee shop. I would feel too much. So what left is not necessarily what came back. There is a part of you that dies. When you pass this planet, there is a part of you that dies. And it's the fabricated self. It's who you think you are. But the real you has always existed and always will continue to exist. And that's what's interesting. That part of me did die on that bathroom floor.
So how did this affect your friendships? Were there loads of people you knew who were, like you were before, very kind of money-orientated?
Yeah, it affected all of my relationships. I would say I lost 99% of them. And loss is a harsh word. I lived a life, a non-spiritual life, a materialistic life that led me to materialistic people. If you had ever mentioned spirituality around me, I wouldn't have been your friend. And when I came back as a spiritual being, those people are in the same seat. They don't want anything to do with somebody who's going to make them look at their existence through a microscope. And I would say almost all of those relationships have disappeared. And I feel no loss because of it. In fact, I feel great love for those people. They're just experiencing their existence where they're at, how they understand to experience it. But they will reincarnate just like we all do and experience life from a different angle. And at some point, they will be spiritual beings too.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Do you have a website?
I do. You won't find me on social media. I'm not interested. I will only work on the website. And that is jonathanashford.com. I write blog posts. I hold a weekly Zoom call, and I hold Zoom sessions for those that are seeking guidance. So you can find me there.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Simon, for having me.
This week, I was talking to John Ashford about his near-death experience. If you would like to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. Or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. My book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.